So tonight's the last talk on equanimity, and the next month we'll be moving into basically a review or summary of all the 10 paramis, kind of see them as a big picture after we've spent this whole year going through them. So equanimity is an interesting Brahma-Vihara and also parami because it can be so supportive of our practice. At the same time, it also needs to be tempered and informed by the other Brahma-Viharas. Because without that, it can become a little sense of aloofness, of distance, of disconnection, of coolness, you know, without that sense of intimacy. While the other Brahma-Viharas all need equanimity to help bring a sense of balance, a sense of ballast to them. So how can we have our hearts connected and still stay in balance with life? And it's a difficult time right now. We have the election and all the things that's kicking up, all the concerns, all the experiences around that. We have Thanksgiving coming up, which for some of us is a wonderful holiday. Others of us, it holds some pain. Maybe remind us of losses that we've had or a sense of loneliness or grief. And then even if there's none of that, there's still sometimes navigating all the family dynamics, which sometimes can be quite challenging. And so this is a nice pre-Thanksgiving reminder to use this always practice. How can we bring that practice to bear in these really, you know, significant times of being with family, being in this climate in our culture, in our society, in our country? How do we be with our loss and with our grief? And it is a bit of a balancing act because we go a little bit too much into the equanimity, we lose that intimacy. We go too much into compassion, for instance, we lose a sense of balance. So I wanted to explore this a little bit before we have a chance for you to talk about it. So equanimity, there's different phrases, just like with all the Brahma-Viharas, that we can both practice with as a formal practice, repeating them again and again, which starts to incline our attention, our minds, our inclination toward those qualities that we're cultivating. It's a cultivation. It can serve as a concentration practice. But also it can simply be an attitude that we start to cultivate, a way of relating to life. For example, metta. We think of the phrases of may you be safe and protected, may you live at ease. But it can also be seen as just this willingness to turn toward experience, toward life, toward another person, toward yourself. This willingness not to shut out, not to hold away, but have a sense of turning toward, even being next to. So some things we can turn towards the deep quality of openness and intimacy. Others, it's enough just to be sitting in approximation too, because they have so much charge. So equanimity is one of those qualities that help make that possible. Sharon Salzberg often would say it's the secret ingredient that helps all these Brahma-Viharas work. So some of the phrases that we explored last week were, may I rest in not knowing, may I rest in calm. May I rest in not knowing, and may I rest in calm. A story, kind of a famous story around this, is of the farmer who has a wild horse come. And all his neighbors are saying, wow, you're so lucky, you have this horse that's come. And the farmer, having a quality of equanimity, says, yeah, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe yes, maybe no. And then the next day, the wild horse runs away with its the farmer's only horse. So suddenly, the farmer has, instead of two horses, no horses. And the friends are all lamenting, like, this is so terrible. The farmer says, maybe yes, maybe no. And then the horse comes back the next day with yet another horse. Now there's three horses. Oh, this is such great news. Maybe yes, maybe no. And the son tries to tame the horse and falls off and breaks his leg. Oh, this is so terrible. Maybe yes, maybe no. And the next day, the soldiers come to draft all the young men. And the son, because of broken leg, does not have to go to war. This is so wonderful. Maybe yes, maybe no. So this is a quality of equanimity, that resting in that knowing that we don't know how circumstances, that some, if you look at your own life, sometimes the most difficult things in your life or difficult things maybe had seeds of wisdom that came from that, that you would never have understood if you didn't have those situations come up. So we don't know how life will unfold. So it's this resting in the not knowing. Another phrase is, may I accept myself as I am. May I accept others as they are. May I accept things as they are. Right? So this also is a difficult one sometimes, because we feel like we don't want to accept some situation. We want to fight against it. And equanimity has this quality of wisdom that helps us discern. Like the serenity poem or prayer, that God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Right? This is, there's so much wisdom in this little prayer, this little reflection, and it's a quality of equanimity. And then the big one, the one we use for the homework, is that all beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness or unhappiness depends upon their actions and not upon my wishes for them. All beings are the owners of their karma or their actions. Their happiness depends upon their actions, not upon my wishes for them. So this particular one, we can see how all the other Brahma-viharas start to be transformed by that phrase. So say I'm offering a metta to someone and may be safe, may be protected. But it's metta with a little bit of an agenda, right? I want that person to be happy. I might call them up and say, do you feel any better now? I've been offering metta for the last week to you. You know, and there seem to be the same grumpy self, and you get discouraged. You know, so there's this little bit of attachment that can seep in to metta, you know, metta with strings attached. Well, metta is really this freely offered gift, this freely offered intentionality, allowing someone, you know, may you be well, but there's not this investment in them being well, because it does depend upon their actions, right? Hopefully they have more wisdom and more compassion, which starts to change the outcome of their karmic fruit. And this word karma, we unpacked that a little bit last week, that in our society we sometimes misuse it or interpret it a different way than we are meant to do through a Buddhist perspective. Karma simply means action. Okay, so actions, especially with more intentionality, some of the questions we talked about. If I really put a lot of intentionality behind an action, it has more potential for that, causing that same circumstance to come up again. You know, one example, after day longs for many years, I would have a sweet tooth and I would go get some sweets right after the day long. But by doing that, the next day long, I was even more inclined to do it and just kind of built this momentum. It's like this neurological groove that comes up. So you can see that just in our habits. We can also see it in ways which are harder to measure. Just, you know, have an act of kindness, we may not see this one-to-one ratio. It may come back in a different way. And actions don't just refer to what we do with our bodies, but also what we do with our mouths, with our speaking, our communication, texting, direct messaging, all these things. And also what we do with our minds, how we think, involves this sense of momentum and potentiality. And we know this as practitioners, that if we learn to sit within our own experience, not act from a sense of reactivity, the next time the situation comes up, perhaps we're not quite as reactive. Especially if you look at it over years, we come and it's like, well, I'm just not as reactive as I used to be. That's because of all of the actions in meditation, to be connected to the present moment and not to throw out, to not to react from it in a way that's harmful. So all beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness or unhappiness depends upon their actions, not my wishes for them. So with metta, you can see how this is a very powerful way of practicing. Now compassion, karuna, is another one that's really helped to balance by equanimity, right? Because we care that there's pain in someone else and in ourselves and society. And sometimes that pain, as we open to it, we can become washed away by it, become overwhelmed by it. Becomes very heavy, very overwhelming, because it's so deep, so vast, so limitless, it seems. And so equanimity starts to come in to bring this balance to it. There's a story that it really speaks to this quality of equanimity. Because often when we have a sense of pain in ourselves or others, part of what hurts is we hold it very personally, very tightly. This is my pain, or this is your pain. Or we empathize. How would I be with this loss? And it becomes so painful, so tight. And this is a process of that there's this woman who lost her child. And she was so overwhelmed with grief that she wasn't willing to actually let this child be buried and carry the child around asking someone to help bring the child back. And person after person, everyone said, no, we can't help you. And someone finally said, go talk to the Buddha about this problem, this issue. And the Buddha said, okay, I can help you with what's bothering you, with your issue, with this, the root of it. But we need a little bit of medicine. What we need is a mustard seed, you know, one of the smallest seeds in almost every household. But it has to come from a household that's never experienced loss, that no one's ever died in that from that household. So this woman went door to door and realized again and again, people were willing to offer her the mustard seeds, but they had lost their mother, their father, their sister, their brother, their daughter, their son. You know, they all had experienced losses. And as she started to see that, she realized, oh, this is not just my own personal loss. This is something that's joined by humanity. So it takes this really kind of burning pain of loss and bringing this much broader perspective that this is part of the human condition. And sometimes this is a very helpful way to reflect. You know, there's a timing of it, right? I wouldn't say this to someone who's in the middle of grief and it's so fresh, but when the grief starts to become a little bit stagnant, it's not really moving through, then that can be a nice reflection to bring in. Or if you're really fearing loss for yourself, feeling your own mortality or those of you you loved, just realizing that everyone that you see, everyone in this room, everyone in this call, have lost people and will lose people and will lose their lives at some point. So compassion and equanimity start to really balance each other. And then mudita, sympathetic joy. A sympathetic joy is a challenging one because it's, I think as human beings, we often have a sense of lack, a sense of inadequacy, a sense of not enough, and it's hard to celebrate someone else's good fortune when we feel like we're diminished. That, you know, that it's hard for the person, the second place person, to congratulate the first place person. You know, perhaps you had some experience of this earlier this month. If an election didn't go the way you wanted, you know, it's hard to really celebrate someone else's good fortune and happiness. So equanimity brings this perspective that, okay, this joy is fleeting. It's going to come and go. There's these worldly winds. But, you know, may that happiness continue. May it deepen, even though it won't. It will change. It will change to something else. And the happiness is not based upon circumstances or situations or possessions or roles, but our actions. You know, can we act in a way that's ethical, that's based in kindness, in connection? That's where happiness really comes from. You know, all this other stuff is momentary. I mean, we all like to have easier lives, prefer that, but yet it's fleeting. It's going to come and go. But that deeper happiness, based on our actions, that becomes more sustaining, more lasting. And then finally, looking at how equanimity itself is really dependent upon these other Brahmaviharas. Because otherwise it has the danger of becoming kind of misinterpreted. Because we can go to this place in our minds, a place in our perception that feels equanimous. That I feel, I'm not really bothered by life anymore. I feel kind of insulated from it. It's like, oh yeah, that's too bad. Okay, you know, but it's just, there's a sense of kind of observing it from afar. Right, so I'm kind of going really into that witness perspective. But as we do that, we start to also realize that we are, if you look closely, there's a sense of distance, a sense of separation. There's a lack of intimacy with life. Christina Feldman would say that, define equanimity or upekkha as being equally near all things. Being equally near all things. So we don't close down, we don't acquire equanimity by closing our heart, but actually opening very broadly, very fully, in a very vast way to all things. Now to do that, we have to also loosen this sense of me, the sense of identity. We have to be not so invested in that particulars, right? Because that particulars, by definition, narrows things down. We start to loosen that sense of self, we start to open into the quality of interconnection. In that interconnection, equanimity is a much more natural perspective, natural state. But it's this interesting paradox because we think, okay, I'm not affected by things, I'm calm, but yet we're able to connect, we're able to be present and related to life. We're able to meet someone who's feeling joy in their life, and we celebrate with them. We connect with someone who's experiencing pain and loss, and our hearts reach out to them. And there's a place of balance in that. There's a sense of warmth of heart, and there's a balance in that. So equanimity needs all these qualities. Can I still be connected? Can I still have a relationship with my heart? And probably maybe the simplest way to define it is when you feel like, okay, I really got this equanimity down, just kind of check out where is that coming from. Because if you're kind of getting to this distortion of it, you're going to find it's coming from about here up. It's coming from your neck up. And it's really coming from your mind, from your head, from your concepts, from your ideas. See if it can drop down into the body. Drop down into the heart and the gut and the tissues of the body. And just that shift of where you're relating to, then you see that the balance of equanimity, of upekkha, of equanimity, of karuna, of compassion, loving kindness, metta, and mudita, sympathetic joy. All right, let's just sit quietly for a moment or two and let those words settle. All right, so in a moment we'll take a little break and then come back for some small group exploration of this topic. I think it's such a powerful thing to do, is to be able to talk about how you're interpreting the practice, how you're using it, and to hear others in their own working with these topics. And just two quick announcements. You know, one is dana. So dana is the Pali word for generosity, and that's how Sims and teachers sustain themselves. And we ask, we don't have like this fee that we charge, but we do rely on people's donations. So please attend to that, have an alive relationship to that with all our events and all our teachers, and also for the organization. And second, we have Philip Moffitt coming online, be online only, not this weekend, but the weekend after. So that's like the 7th and 8th, I think.
Yep.
So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So Philip Moffitt is a very well-known, renowned teacher. You know, he used to be the editor of Esquire, so he has this whole kind of business capacity, but he has a very deep Dharma practice. He's one of Tweri's really deep teachers or main mentors. So I encourage you to come to that if you can. All right, we'll take a 5-minute break, come back at 8:06, and we'll explore it on your own voices. All right, so let me frame the discussion, and then we'll break up into groups, both online and here in person. So basically, it centers around this homework and this phrase, this phrase of all beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness or unhappiness depends on their actions, not upon my wishes for them. So how does this inform your metta, your loving kindness, your sympathetic joy? And can those qualities be present at the same time as equanimity? So basically what we just explored in the talk. But what have you noticed in your own practice? You know, how have you found that? Okay, I start to feel this sense of metta, and it's going really well, and then the person's mean to me, and then then I lose it. You know, or maybe I was able to find a sense of balance with that. You know, so try to make it a live practice. So maybe something that you've reflected upon, or maybe something you could just do spontaneously. Like I'm about to go spend time with my in-laws, and I'm not sure how it's going to go. They're on the opposite side of the political spectrum than me, and how am I going to find a sense of balance with that? How can I bring equanimity to bear? Right? So talking around equanimity, how it is informed by the other Brahma Viharas, and how they also help equanimity not become too cold and distant. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? All right, so we'll talk for about 20 minutes, and these discussion groups are a chance for you to speak from your own experience, to share as heartfelt as you can. But it's not a time to really give advice or suggestions to someone. Just let people share and really focus on the listening practice as well as the speaking practice, trying to monitor the time and hold everything that's said in the groups in confidence and with kindness. All right, so let's break up into groups of 4 to 5 people, and then we'll come back in 20 minutes. I'll give you about a 5-minute warning before we finish. All right, so in the room, find 4 or 3 other people, and online you'll be put in groups in a moment. All right, welcome back to the larger room. All right, what was your exploration around with equanimity and the Brahma Viharas? Anyone like to share anything, or you have any questions about your practice? Feel free to raise your hand and we'll have Nate can walk around with the mic. And anyone online, you can just raise your virtual hand.
So I won't share any details of what we talked about in the group, but like that, a kind of a theme that we were all having to deal with recently is like knowing when to take action versus when to just accept a situation. Mm-hmm. And like the challenge of, you know, like the serenity prayer, figuring out for yourself, you know, the difference between those two, like that's something that it seems like we were all having to deal with. So I don't know if you have any words about that. How to like discern that for yourself?
Sure, yeah, it's a great question. You know, for myself, I find it's very helpful to kind of notice my kind of habit. What's my natural tendency to do something? Like, let's say my natural tendency is to like be quiet and not step up or not say anything. I would kind of question when that comes up and that feels like that's what I should do. It's like, okay, maybe I need to actually go stretch beyond my normal, you know, pattern. And this is not only helping us kind of break loose of those patterns, but it also helps to loosen up this, because our patterns show us or kind of reinforce this kind of construct of self, this belief in self. It kind of keeps everything intact. If I start to do something outside of my comfort zone or my normal way of doing things, it starts to loosen that up, or has the potential for that. So that's one thing I check. I also check kind of, I'd like to tune into the body and see what's the body have to say about this. Because the minds can justify lots of things, right? You can have this dialogue, or I shouldn't do this, or someone else is going to do it. But it feels very different than when I come into my body. And often when I connect with what's the action that feels more you know, wise, that wisdom between, you know, of acceptance or the wisdom of courage to act. There's a sense of almost alignment that comes in, that clicks in, even if it's a difficult thing to do, even if it feels like it's scary or feels like it's, you know, I'm not used to doing this, I'm not sure how it's going to go. There's a sense of alignment that comes in. And then once we start to do that more and more, we start to look for that feeling. And sometimes we're just confused, or sometimes it's unclear what the action should be, what is really helpful, what's really beneficial. But luckily we have, you know, lots of people we can ask and get advice and get support around. And actually in terms of like some of the actions come, you know, with the outcome of the election, we're going to actually do something with university friends. And because as Quakers, they're very into social action and activism. So we actually do a joint event where we learn some things we can do. Yes, we can do small things, we can do big things. I think it's also helpful to see what really can I influence. Influence that, and then that starts to grow to something bigger. Does that help? Does that get to your question a bit?
Yeah.
Good. Is there something else, another piece around that?
Yeah, that was really helpful in terms of like when to take action. But we were talking about that, and we were also talking about like when you can't really take action and you can't do anything other than accept the situation. So we were talking about that also.
So that's it, because that can be really hard too, is when we want to do something and we're helpless. So there's really nothing we can do to change the circumstance. And so that's also the flip side of it. It's like, how do I sit with this experience? How do I, you know, feel that sense of lack of control, that lack of influence, the sense of hopelessness or the sense of grief? All those things, you know, open to it, feel it as deeply, as fully as you can, but also not too much, not to the point where you lose your balance. So it's like, how do I open to that? And it is, you know, sometimes it does get very heavy, because we realize, okay, there's not much I can really do at times. It just seems like so overwhelming. And so that's also the piece of equanimity, is how can I find that sense of balance in my mind as I open to things which I can't change. And sometimes it's also, I think it's helpful to kind of dissect, is it something that I really want to change because I wish I could change it? Or is it more, I'm just not comfortable not being in charge? Am I not comfortable, you know, being in control? Because that's a different question, right? Because sometimes, I mean, at Seattle Insight, I tend to have an opinion of how things should be done, but it's not very helpful for me to always be doing things and getting in other people's areas of responsibility. So just kind of, I practice stepping back and trusting and letting people do things in a way that they see helpful and makes sense to them, and celebrating and supporting that. And so there's a lot of richness around that whole dialogue and that exploration. You're welcome. All right, what else? You have a question? Great. Could you wait till they get the mic so they can hear you online?
I think I like your voice, and I want to know what kind of tips can you give. I want to have a little bit your voice. I think it's I feel a little bit calm. I feel so.
From the tone of my voice, or
yeah,
the way I
yeah,
say things.
Yeah.
How do you have your own calmness?
Probably like that. Probably like a voice. Like a voice. Like how to practice your voice. Like you speak slowly. I think, or something.
Well, how. what I would say around that is, when I'm speaking like in terms of Dharma situations, and I try to do, and I'm getting a little bit of feedback. In other times in my life, but you know, can I speak from a place that feels embodied, that feels connected? So it's kind of this internal connection, and then from there, the voice kind of comes out. In terms of like the particular tone of the voice, I mean, that's just has my vocal cords or who knows what else. But there's a sense of trying to connect with the words, with my own self as I'm speaking, and connecting with someone else as I'm speaking. And I think that helps, you know, whatever your own voice will be or is, it's helping you kind of connect with that genuine quality of that. Does that help a little bit, or does that make sense?
I'm not sure I understand. So you're saying is what you say is from your heart. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. That's, you could sum it up like that. Yeah, I try to connect with my heart and speak from my heart, and that changes the way the voice comes out.
Oh. Come out. Okay. I can. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking that. All right. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? Yes. All right, then we'll get to you in a second, Kathy.
Just a small sharing. A simple practice that I have incorporated into my life that's been impactful, and I think very much in the spirit of equanimity, is relaxing, just simply relaxing my body. Mm. As often as I can remember to. And in doing that, I just find or notice how often I'm kind of tight and contracted.
Yeah.
And it becomes a doorway to more spaciousness and kind of a felt sense of an opening of equanimity. And not always something that immediately provides relief or space, but that over time accrues and develops and has just really been transformative, I think, in the way that I experience life moment to moment.
Yeah, beautiful, that sense of physically relaxing. And yeah, you know, the trick is, how do we do that when we're, you know, that's not the situation, we just feel like there's so much tension or we feel so charged by something. How do we find that gateway back in to relaxing? And that's tricky. A lot of times for myself, it has to do with my relationship of my mind and my thoughts and how invested I am, how much I'm identified with them. And the more identified with them, you know, the harder it is to release. Sometimes we can play with kind of going opposite of that, like, okay, I want to try to make myself as tense as possible and equanimous as possible. And just kind of make it a little bit more pronounced, because we're kind of cooking along with this level of tension that we're kind of is normalized. If I make it a little bit worse or more pronounced, then there's a more natural gateway into releasing. You know, like that whole, you know, you're trying to relax, you first tense your muscles as tight as you can, and then you release, there's kind of a deeper release that comes from that. So sometimes we can play with that, you know, do that mentally. Okay, I'm really not equanimous. Let me get really attached to this, to the point where it just doesn't make sense. It just like start to laugh at it or becomes ridiculous. And then we start to find that balance. And I think it's also helpful, you know, for all of us to have some way of making the body a friendly place, a place of grounding, whether it's, you know, going for walks or doing Tai Chi or some other kind of art form that really reinforces the sense of being present in the body. Yeah, because I think equanimity, it's hard to find it and connect with it in the world of the mind. Right? The mind can make lots of stories about the future, make lots of stories about the past, but the body kind of lives here in the present moment. So if I can connect with that, I can be, the equanimity kind of opens up in that gateway. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. All right, Kathy, you want to still go ahead? And then we can do Lori after that.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I can be brief.
Let's see.
Do you probably I think you kind of already answered. You already addressed That's what I was.
Job. Oh, you have permission.
Am I still muted?
Let's see. You're still muted.
I'm muted.
Or maybe is the volume down, Cheryl?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Okay, it was. Try again.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah, that was on our end. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So you just said something that went by me and kind of caught my mind, which is I'm thinking about being the owner of my own karma. I tend to want to do something or feel like I must do something that someone else could do. It might be their job to do it, in fact, or might not, or it could be something that someone else easily could do, because I want it done right. And I see that in this context in such a useful way, but any clues you might have about how bringing equanimity into this and at what point I might have intervene in this process.
Okay, so the process around that pattern of knowing the right way to do it, and you want to do it done the right way, and you're not letting the sense of control that comes up with that, not letting other people do something imperfectly, and how does equanimity fit in with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and also relating to that phrase of my I'm an owner of my own actions, my own karma. And this is a really important one, right? Because I can, you know, I do this a lot with my family. Because there's a nature, part of my nature tends to be a little bit controlling that, you know, wants, you know, things done a certain way. And learning, the more I reinforce that, it's more likely for that pattern to come up in the future, right? So that's the rub there. But if I want to have more of a sense of equanimity, a sense of, okay, maybe my way is the right way, maybe it's not. There's a sense of surrender, a sense of letting go that happens. That can be very helpful for that. Now, for myself, you know, feeling the pattern is sometimes difficult because you're so in the middle of it, you don't see it so clearly. So if it's someone you know well, or you're a friend or a loved one, you can ask them to kind of reflect, what's it like when I get like that? Tell me what your experience is of me. Do you like that pattern or do you not like that pattern? You know, my wife points out when I say that she's doing it, it's like, well, that's what you do all the time. So it's helpful to kind of just take in the impact and see that, because that kind of sobers it up. It helps you have more urgency to try to change it. But ultimately, you have to kind of go down to that. You try to have to catch it, the initialness of it, the initial movement toward that pattern before you actually act on that pattern to start to change it. So you might just sit like, okay, I'm sitting here. We practice sitting and being quiet all the time, right? So we're sitting and we feel this impulse to do, you know, I want the cushion not that way, but this way, all right? And I can feel the urgency to move with that. But if I hold back and actually acting with it, I can work with it in that level. It starts to quiet down the pattern. Then I can maybe see, oh, you know, that pattern. Like I shared this a few months ago, like the dishwasher, loading the dishwasher. I had this idea the dishes should go this way. You know, that's the only way that makes sense. My wife always did it the wrong way. And I would, you know, fight with that and feel upset by that. And then one day I realized, if I do it the way she did, it's actually easier to unload the dishwasher. I said, oh, she was actually doing it the right way. But it's like you have to be willing to kind of let go of our grip around what's right. And dukkha, the first noble truth, seeing the suffering around it, that's the way that we often learn it.
That's great. Thanks, Tim.
You bet. All right, Lori, thanks for joining us. You like to share anything?
Yeah, thank you. Great talk. I'm sorry. I was wondering if you could review the homework. What I guess we do this for the next week is your suggestion?
Yes. Yeah. Usually the way the timing goes is every other week we do a full talk, like a 40-minute talk or so. And then the next week, the week after that, we practice it. And then we come and do a discussion. So next week, we'll actually have a whole new talk. But the homework, Ken, do you happen to have it? If you could throw it in the chat, but I could say it to you real quick. What was it?
Oh, I wrote it. I read it, but I didn't understand what it meant.
Okay, yeah. Practice with this equanimity phrase, both in meditation and daily life. So the phrase, all beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness or unhappiness depends on upon their actions and not my wishes for them. So what you might practice with that is before each sit, just say that a few times. You know, or you're seeing, maybe you're feeling this, some of these patterns come up, maybe around Thanksgiving or maybe around friendships or something difficult. You might just say that when you feel a little attached to someone being a certain way. You want them to be happy and they're not happy. You want their pain to go away and it's not going away. To say this phrase a few times and just let it kind of percolate in the background. Allow it to start to change a perspective that, oh yeah, maybe I wish you to be happy, but it's really ultimately it's your own actions that's going to be the cause and source of that happiness. And then finally, how does that phrasing around equanimity start to change the way you relate to metta, around sympathetic joy, mudita, around compassion, karuna? And can those qualities be present even and also with equanimity? Is it an either or? Are they mutually exclusive? Or do they actually come together and support each other?
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then, yeah, Ken just put that in the chat. Thank you. Yes. Repeat the whole thing again. Sure. Is there any more copies back there? Or was it about the election?
Yeah, it's about the election.
Oh, okay. Well, we had a bunch of them, but I'll tell you anyway. So it's practice with this equanimity phrase, both in meditation and daily life. All beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness or unhappiness depends upon their actions and not upon my wishes for them. And then how does this inform loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy? Can those qualities be present at the same time as equanimity? Okay, you got it? All right, good. All right, we have a few more minutes if there's any other questions. Yes, Deborah?
Yeah, I was working with your other phrase that you mentioned last week of resting in unknowing.
Yes.
Which is kind of seems like a protection against catastrophizing.
Mm.
But I really felt a tension between the unknowing, just, yes, we don't know what the future will hold, and the unknowing of hiding in deliberate ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
as a shield, but not necessarily a useful, wise shield.
Yeah, yeah. Each of these, that's great, because each of these phrases we could, you know, use them in a way that's counterproductive, that's not helpful, so that I don't want to know, I am keeping myself ignorant, keeping myself disconnected is going too far the other way. But then there's the balance, okay, I do see things, I do know what's going on, and I'm going to rest in the not knowing what the future holds. I mean, look at there's so much narrative, around what the future is going to hold. Everyone's kind of throwing out their ideas and interpreting things, but we don't know, right? But then there's facts that arise, and then, okay, that once that fact is there, then I can really meet that as fully as I can. But that's exactly right. You know, there can be that balance, that sense of pulling away, disconnecting, hiding from. Another side of it, there can be the wise part of that when I'm just getting overwhelmed by it, you know, because the news sources don't necessarily care about your mental health, your mental balance. They're like, hey, look at this horrible thing. Oh, there's this other one. Oh, this is really bad. You think that was bad? Look up at this one. And you're just like, oh my God. And this is what might happen. Oh, this might happen. Oh, this is even worse. And pretty soon we're so stressed out, we want to run away and hide. Right? So it's finding that what's the right balance? And that's, unfortunately, I can't just give you the perfect ratio. What we can give you is the tools to notice for yourself. How am I staying imbalanced? Am I feeling connected? Anytime I deal with something that's painful or difficult, I know when I can also be aware of other things at the same time, then I'm in balance. What I mean by that is, let's say this represents something painful, this cup. And this represents something like my breath, my feet touching the ground, the beauty of the clouds against the sky. If I can feel both of them and be aware of both of them, then I'm in balance. But when my whole life becomes the cup, then I'm out of balance. If I'm ignoring the cup, I'm out of balance. But sometimes I need to kind of ignore it to find balance again. All right, so that's a really rich territory. It's part of our journey toward emotional health, working with our trauma, with our nervous system. This is the territory that we all have to work with. All right. Anyone else have any questions or sharing? Yes. We'll bring the mic up.
I guess the cup was a good example, but I was just trying to get my mind around equanimity, and maybe you could give an example of like what equanimity would look like, maybe in the case of loss or politics.
Mm-hmm. And there's the equanimity. There's one that arises spontaneously, and there's a way we practice to try to find equanimity. So there's a kind of two different categories. I shared this a few weeks ago that we had gone off to a dance competition with my daughter, came back, and the car that we had put into a lot got wrecked. And as I heard that news from the company, it was interesting to watch what came up. It wasn't outrage, it wasn't grief, it was just like, oh, that's interesting. So, yeah, and then how do we work with it? What's our next steps? So there's a sense of not being reactive, of being, it wasn't the news I wanted to hear, but I wasn't, you know, yelling at the person. I wasn't upset. I wasn't remorseful. There's a quality of equanimity combined with, you know, wise action. And I didn't plan that to happen. That just is what arose in that. You know, in different circumstances, I could get really reactive. So I get really reactive about something. Then it's like, okay, how do I regain that balance? Sometimes it's like Thanksgiving's coming up. Let's say I'm having, you know, dinner, and one of my brothers says something, I get really charged by that because they always know exactly where to get me. You know, and so that comes up, you know, I could just engage with that, or I could say, okay, I'm going to go take a quick walk around and, you know, go out, see nature, let nature kind of reflect the spaciousness and help me remind me of that spaciousness. Acknowledge, okay, I felt really hurt by that because, oh yeah, it touches that deep wounding. Oh yeah, oh no, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not six anymore. Oh yeah, that's right. And then I come back and there's a quality of being more balanced back in relationship. So you see that sometimes it just arises, and that's kind of the fruit and the gift of our practice. That at times we would usually be reactive, something shifted, we have shifted, we're not reactive in the same way. Celebrate, appreciate, enjoy those times, and also practice when you are reactive. How do I start to bring that sense of calm and grounding? And sometimes I do have to take myself out, rebalance myself, and then come back into a relationship. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your question. All right, maybe one more if there's anything. Any Thanksgiving advice? Any Okay, looks like that's a full night for everyone. So next week, the second of December, again, we'll be going one more month with the paramis, but again, looking at them as a kind of a big picture. How do they relate? Because we spent a whole year going month by month exploring the paramis. So we have a deeper understanding of them through our practice, through our working with them, and then seeing how they actually relate to each other. Right? So I'll be teaching the rest of December, and then next year will be a whole new teaching theme. We'll be actually exploring the Four Noble Truths. All right, so have a wonderful evening, and I wish you all well, and I hope your Thanksgiving goes as well as it can. I hope you find some sense of connection, some sense of gratitude, and if it's a difficult time, take care of your hearts, take care of yourself. All right, thank you.